And a good Thursday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by The Law Group. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. We'll have more from them coming up a little bit later on in the program this morning. Well, a lot going on in Washington, D.C. over the last couple of days. Two votes in the United States Senate, both two nights ago and last night, as Republicans, which of course do have the majority in not only the Senate, the House, but of course controlling the Oval Office, are now officially going forward and I guess you would say codifying or solidifying some of the cuts out of the Department of Government Efficiency. And the first phase of that, one of the first big steps of that, is this Senate bill that was approved last night in a 51-48 vote. This is a major package that is set to cut spending, billions of dollars worth of spending across the United States. All Republicans voting in favor of it, besides Susan Collins of Maine and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. Those are the two that are consistently voting with the Democrats in the United States Senate on a variety of issues. These two have the track record of doing that. It is a $9 billion bill that is making significant cuts to programs, both foreign and domestic. And one of the big cuts are finally codified in this, the cuts to NPR and PBS. Now, you go back and look at the history of public media. You look at originally what PBS and NPR were set up to do. This is something that the federal government has funded in large part, not all, fully, but in large part for many, many decades now. Republicans for 50 years, 40 years, have talked about making cuts to congressional funding of NPR and PBS. And well, with this step in the Senate over the last 2 days and what we are expecting to come forward in the United States House today and tomorrow, well, this the idea of federal funding of these two major entities will be no more. And we've talked about NPR and PBS in the past. We've talked about public media. We're going to get into some of it, but if you go back and check the archives of the show, I did a full breakdown on this back a couple of probably about a month and a half or so ago, talking about NPR and PBS, talking about public media, what it was set up to do. We're not going to rehash all of that this morning, but there are a couple of things I want to focus in on as we watch this process. So the $9 billion cut would eliminate funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. That is the entity that funds PBS and NPR. According to Republican Senator Eric Schmidt of Missouri, told reporters, quote, "They have betrayed the trust of the American people. They have been ideologically captured by the left." Now, there's two different things to go about when we talk about cuts to public media. Two different avenues that we need to go. First is information-wise, and then the second is public safety. Those, I think, are the two main vehicles and two main discussions that need to take place when you talk about NPR and PBS and public media. So let's spend just a little bit of time on information. I want to spend a lot more on public safety. I would make the point, and I think many would make the point, that NPR and PBS have gotten away from what they were originally intended to be, which were public broadcasters that provided, you know, educational content. You look at the history of PBS and all of the shows and that they had through the 70s and 80s and 90s, very successful children's programs. And that was one of the main features, one of the main portions of PBS. NPR, obviously a little bit different. It's an audio format, so you're not doing children's television shows or children's performances on the radio. It doesn't really fit the medium very well. But you go to information, right? These entities were set up in large part to provide information, public broadcasters, public information to the citizens of the United States, national public radio. And what you've seen over the last 15 or 20 years is an ideological shift in what these entities are producing. And many of you if you disagree with what I'm saying, you might say to yourself, well, Nick, you're a conservative. Of course, you're going to believe that NPR and PBS have a left-leaning, have a liberal bias. And you, of course, you'd be accurate with that assessment. Yes, I am, in fact, a conservative. Yes, I do, in fact, believe that these entities have strayed away from their original purpose, their original goals, and have absolutely turned into ideological channels, ideological venues for the political left. But it's not just me that thinks this. I will remind you, I take you all the way back to April of last year, and an individual by the name of Yuri Berliner, who spent 25 years working at NPR. He was a senior business editor at NPR. He wrote a scathing piece that ran over at the Free Press about what has happened at NPR and PBS. If you have not read through this, or maybe you read through it last April when it first came out, I would encourage you to do so. Again, just search for Yuri Berliner. We'll also have the links over in our show notes at patreon.com/Nick Craig. This is a scathing review of NPR, and the headline is this: I've been at NPR for 25 years. Here's how we lost America's trust. And I just want to read through the first paragraph or two of this. It says, you know the stereotype of NPR listeners, an EV-driving, Wordle-playing, tote-bag-carrying coastal elite. It doesn't precisely describe me, but it's not far off. I'm Sarah Lawrence, educated, was raised by a lesbian peace activist mother. I drive a Subaru, and my Spotify says my listening habits are similar to people in Berkeley. I fit the NPR mold. I'll cop to that. So when I got a job 25 years ago, I never looked back. As a senior editor on the business desk where news is always breaking, we've covered upheavals in the workplace, supermarket prices, social media, and AI. It's true, NPR has always had a liberal bent, but during most of my tenure here, an open-minded, curious culture prevailed. We were nerdy, but not knee-jerk activists or scolding. In recent years, however, that has changed. Today, those who listen to NPR or read its coverage online find something different: the distilled worldview of a very small segment of the U.S. population. Those are the direct words from Yuri Berliner, again, a 25-year veteran of NPR, who describes in his open, all of the things that make him the mold, copping to the fact that, hey, yeah, I fit the NPR mold. Here is a guy that has journalistic integrity. Here is a guy that understands the difference and can very clearly see the line between objective journalism, objective news, and opinion. He blasted now his former employer in this post in April of last year. He was then immediately suspended and then removed from his position. And around this time, he appeared on News Nation with Chris Cuomo. And just to, again, solidify the fact that this is not just thoughts from conservatives, who, of course, are going to be hypercritical of NPR and PBS. This is the thoughts of an individual who you might describe has spent the vast majority of his life in his professional career. When you spend 25 years at an organization, that is a significant amount of time. The vast majority of people do not spend 25 years at the same place. Individuals are jumping around, finding different work, moving around the country. 25 years at one place is pretty remarkable. I mean, you're talking about when this happened from the late 90s all the way up until last year. A lot of changes happening in media, the media landscape between 1999 and 2024. Significant changes in media, how it's delivered, the adoption of the internet and social media, drastic changes. So here's directly from the horse's mouth. Here's Yuri Berliner on with Chris Cuomo of News Nation a little over a year and a half ago when this whole thing really broke down.
I'm not surprised by the response that came from management and the same managers that I've been making a lot of these points about. And they're certainly entitled to that perspective. I will say I've had a lot of support from colleagues, and many of them unexpected, who say they agree with me. Some of them say this confidentially, but I think there's been a lot of response saying, look, these are things that need to be addressed. We haven't. We've been too reluctant, too frightened, too timid to deal with these things. And I think that this is the right opportunity to bring it all out in the open.
So for those who are sitting there saying, I knew it, NPR, those laconic lefties, you know, with that slow delivery and just feeding us all of this. Are you saying that's the truth, or are you saying it's something that has evolved? What do you want people to feel about NPR and what you feel about the media in general?
I think it's evolved. You know, I've been at NPR a long time, 25 years. You could say I'm a lifer, and it's a place I've always loved working. But when I started, there was a liberal orientation, but I think we were more guided by curiosity, open-mindedness. You know, you said, talked about policy. We were kind of nerdy and really like to dig into things and understand the complexity of things. That I think that's evolved over the years into a much narrower kind of niche thinking, a group think that's really clustered around a very selective progressive views that don't allow enough air, enough spaciousness to consider all kinds of perspectives.
So you use some very powerful words that people kind of see as sacrosanct, whether it's, you know, indicating bias of what people call woke these days, or political correctness or cancel culture. You know, these are often seen as instruments of the left. One, were you worried that, I hope you saved up your money, you are a business editor, so hopefully you're good with your own investing, because they're going to kick you to the curb and nobody's going to want you, especially as a white guy, you know, who's not 18. So what do you make of going after these sacred cows?
I'm not worried. I think people want open dialogue. I think people want to have honest debates. And I think, you know, you talked about there's a hunger for this. Most people are not locked into ideologies. And I think many people are just sick of it. And it's one of the reasons people distrust so much of the media, whether it's legacy media, whether it's conservative media. You know what you're getting. It's all pre-digested and spit out to you. You know what the take is going to be. And I think it's ultimately unsatisfying. And for a vast part of this nation, they don't want it. So I think there's an opportunity there for much broader perspectives in how we cover the news.
So let's look at a couple of different things here. And again, those are Yuri Berliner's words. I would argue that guy who has spent 25 years working at the entity called NPR, National Public Radio, he has pretty good insight as to what's going on there. He is not, I don't know that anybody could describe him as a rabid conservative. He doesn't describe himself as such. And so there's a couple of things to dissect from that. Is there an issue with so-called bias media? No. You look at cable news. I've got it on my TV right next to me right now. I've got my four box of news up. Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, and BBC America. I have that on all day, every day when I'm here working at home. And so is there inherently an issue with so-called biased media? No, I don't think so. Fox News is biased media. They cater to center-right and conservative-leaning audiences. You look at Newsmax. They appeal to and cover news from a more conservative right-wing viewpoint. You then look at MSNBC and CNN. They cover news, more CNN from a left-leaning, left-wing ideology, and then you look at MSNBC and they're much further to the left. Those are entities, some of them more successful than others. Obviously, Fox dominates cable news. CNN is barely struggling, is just barely holding on. But MSNBC is relatively popular, again, because it is targeting an audience that wants that kind of affirmation in their news. They are targeting an audience, and I, as I've had it on over the last couple of days, all they're talking about is Jeffrey Epstein and Trump and the MAGA base. They are playing into their audience. And let me be clear, there's no issue with that. If you can go out and find advertisers and find viewers that want to watch that content, I don't have an issue. If you want to go out and find an audience and find people to support that kind of coverage, support that kind of content, have at it. I'm the greatest example of it. I am now running a single operation, morning podcast covering news absolutely from a more right-leaning perspective. I'm not ashamed of that. I'm not hiding away from that. I am going out, finding an audience, the great audience that has supported this show in this transition when I was kicked off radio a year ago this week, found great folks that have come alongside the show, supported it financially on Patreon, great advertisers like the Law Group here who are financially supporting the operation and allowing me to do this each and every morning. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with it at all. So, I say all of that to make the point. Biased media, I don't have an issue with. Do I wish there was maybe some less bias in media? Absolutely. Do I try and push myself to look at both sides of the story? Yes. That's why you've heard me talk about Ground News for a period of time. Because it's a great website where you can see both sides of the story. You go to Ground News or nickcraig.com/ground, and you can see, here's what the left-wing perspective is saying about a news story. Here's what the right-wing perspective is saying. I still consume both sides of the media. It's why I watch all of these channels throughout the day and glance over dozens of times and see what they're covering. And if it's something interesting, I turn up the volume, listen for a few minutes, and go back to work. So is there an opportunity to be less biased? Absolutely. But biased media is not the problem. The issue with NPR and PBS is not only are they biased media, but they are receiving taxpayer dollars to do so. And that's, to me, where this conversation really starts and stops. If NPR and PBS want to continue to promote the content that they do, most of it skewing left-wing, if they want to do that, have at it. There are hundreds of millions of Americans that want to consume content. There's hundreds of millions of people across the world that want to consume American news. If there is an audience there, if there is an avenue there to promote your political ideology, promote your content, I don't have an issue with that. This is, I think, often a misconception from the left. They say, you want to shut down NPR and PBS. No, I actually don't. I do not want to shut down NPR and PBS. What I don't want to do is pay for it anymore. What I don't want to do is have my taxpayer dollars funding very clear and obvious left-leaning media. If you want to go out, and by the way, PBS and NPR already do this. They already go out and get, they're not called advertisers, they're called corporate sponsors because they're public media. They go out and do this. They have their yearly pledge drives where they ask their supporters, they ask the individuals that enjoy their content to support them financially. It's no different than what I'm doing here on the podcast. The only main difference is I'm also not receiving money from the federal government, from the state government, or local government. I would not be eligible to do that. If I went to New Hanover County and said, hey, I want a grant, or I went to the New Hanover Community Endowment and said, hey, I want $25,000, they'd laugh me out of the room. Because it wouldn't make sense to do that. It wouldn't make sense for them to fund media like this. Not that this media is bad. Not that there's inherently anything wrong with it. But it's not the public's responsibility to fund that media from the federal government standpoint, from the Corporation of Public Broadcasting standpoint. If they want to support that message, if they want to get their narratives out there, which obviously they do, that's the reason that media is media as a whole, Then do it. Get more corporate sponsors. Get more corporate underwriters. Get more individuals to pledge to the cause at $50, $100, $150 a month, whatever the NPR pledge drive is, and support it that way. That's the point. And anytime you bring this up, you have those on the left that will immediately go after, oh, you're trying to kill NPR and PBS. I'm not. I genuinely am not. This is not tongue-in-cheek. This is not sarcastic. I genuinely say it when I mean it. I do not want NPR and PBS to go away. I do not. I don't. But I don't want the federal government to fund it. If there is enough individuals, which by the way, there are. If there are enough individuals that want to support that financially, If there are enough companies that believe that they want NPR and PBS to continue to exist, then they need to go out and get that money. I spent, you know, since I've moved to Wilmington, I've spent the entirety working in radio, right? On the new rendition of The Big Talker here at 106.7 FM. Great group over there I worked with for a couple of years, then transitioning over to 980 and doing the morning show there for the better part of 3 years. We didn't receive any corporate dollars. We didn't receive big grants from the federal government. We had to produce high quality content to go out to local businesses in our area, in New Hanover, Pender, and Brunswick County, and convince them that they should give us hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a month in terms of advertising. That's the model. That's what conservative radio has to do all across the United States, in every single market. In some cases, multiple stations in the same town. They have to go out to their community and say, hey, business owner, do you like what you're hearing? Is there a big enough audience here that you'd want to support this financially? That's what they do. That is the model of advertising. It's what conservative media and conservative talk radio has done since Rush Limbaugh really kind of kicked it into full gear back in the 80s. And since then, that's been the case. The media landscape is changing, however, right? You're seeing stations that are no longer funding local morning shows. Case in point here in Wilmington, there's not a single local talk show on with a conservative or Republican or right-leaning angle on in the morning. They've completely eliminated that position. And it's because of advertising. It's a tough market right now. There's a lot of ways to get content. There's podcasts. There's YouTube. There's satellite radio and Spotify. The media industry is a really, really tough one right now. I'm not oblivious to that. I've spent my entire adult life working in or around it. So I get it's a tough industry. And so again, if there's an audience for it, if there's groups of individuals that want to support that, then that's the avenue forward. That's how this process needs to go. It does not need to be funded by you and I, the taxpayers of the United States. Reading from an article over at Bloomberg this morning, the public media outlets receive a small portion of their funding from federal sources, in addition to dollars from sponsors and individual donors. The networks have said that smaller stations, which produce local-oriented programming, could close as a result of the cuts. See, those two things don't add up. And you can't say it's a small portion of funding, but then people are going to have to start closing their doors. Is it a small portion of funding, or is it a large portion of funding? You can't have it both ways. And this is where the Democrats, I think, fall into a trap with this. They say, oh, well, it's not that much money. When you look at the funding for funding for PBS, there's a great chart. Let's see if I can pull it up real quick that shows the makeup of, here it is, the makeup and the funding of, and this is just PBS, again, different entities between PBS and NPR. So here's your funding chart, your pie chart, your 100% funding. Government support is about 14%. So when you look at that, is that the largest sum of money in the world? No, it's 14%. It's not the vast majority of the piece. Now, is it still a significant portion? I'd say so. For losing 14% of your funding absolutely has an impact, no question about it. But again, you have to decide. You can't out of one side of your mouth say, well, it's really not that much money, the government should continue to fund it. But then out of the other side say, well, if these cuts happen, all of these stations are going to have to shut down because they're not going to have revenue. They're not going to have a cash to operate. It can't be both. It has to either be one or the other. Back to the Bloomberg article. Holdout Republicans secured a commitment for a one-time $10 million infusion to tribal broadcasting stations ahead of the vote. The package would also cancel funding for foreign aid grants in the U.S. Agency for International Development, also USAID budget as well, for smaller agencies targeted for closure by President Trump. So when you look at, again, public broadcasting, you look at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, that's the CPB that funds NPR and PBS, we are not talking about massive sums of money, at least percentage-wise, to these entities. And so, again, from an information standpoint, do I have an issue with NPR and PBS? I do not. Here locally, we look at our local NPR affiliate in Wilmington, WHQR. Do they do a lot of good stuff? Absolutely. Do they dig into a lot of good stories? Absolutely, they do. Do I want to see them go away? No, I do not. I don't agree with a lot of the stuff that they write. It's very obvious, especially from a few of their reporters, their very obvious left-leaning bias. But that doesn't mean I want them out of a job. That doesn't mean that I don't want that content available to people in southeastern North Carolina. That's good. You know, we, at least on the right, I am of the mindset that the vast majority of us want people to be free thinkers, to have access to both sides of the story, to see it from a conservative viewpoint, to see it from a liberal viewpoint, and then, of course, determine where the facts lie, normally somewhere in the middle, and then come up with a conclusion, come up with whatever your thoughts or your ideas are on a matter or an issue. So no, I don't want WHQR to disappear. I don't want them kicked off or and run out of town. Quite the contrary. I think it is important to have that available. And if the public believes it's that important, if their donors and their sponsors believe that it's that important, then they need to come alongside them and support it. Plain and simple. The same way that conservative radio has operated for 40 years now. The same way that local television stations across our area, WECT and WWAY, the same way that they operate, selling advertising, selling sponsorships to various people throughout the area. Question in our Rumble live chat this morning, what's the over-under on WHQR disappearing? Oh, they're going to be totally fine. They've got a very strong group of listeners here in southeastern North Carolina. They've got a lot of great corporate sponsors and a lot of support from their audience. They're going to be totally fine. They're not going anywhere. Now, might there have to be some small reductions? There's a possibility of that, sure. But they're not closing their doors. They're not disappearing tomorrow because of this decision in the United States Senate last night that is going to be now making its way over to the United States House. So that's it from an information standpoint. Again, like providing news, providing coverage of what's going on. There's also then the public safety side of this that some Democrats are taking as well. I have got a lot of insight on that, working in as a broadcast engineer, dealing with things behind the scenes, and I want to completely dispel a lot of this a boy who cried wolf that's coming out from members of Congress and those on the political left over how people are going to die because of these cuts to NPR and PBS. I'll have a full rundown, something you will not hear anywhere else as it relates to the public safety standpoint of funding public media. We'll have those details coming up here in just a few minutes. Again, the Nick Craig Show is supported by our great audience at patreon.com/Nick Craig and our great sponsors like The Law Group. They want to remind you that when legal challenges arise, make sure you put your trust in The Law Group. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across eastern North Carolina. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong defense, The Law Group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved promptly. Great news, ladies and gentlemen. They are located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. That's 910-251-6088, or their website, lawgroupnc.com. When you head on over to their website, not only can you meet the team, all of the experienced attorneys working there, you can see the areas of practice that they operate in. And really, one of the big things is their blog. It covers a variety of legal challenges and matters, and you can read all about those over at their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. We so much appreciate their support and their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. The program on a Thursday morning rolls on, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. And a good Thursday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. We are discussing a vote out of the United States Senate last night, a 51-48 vote, with all Republicans besides Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski voting in favor of cutting nearly $9 billion out of the federal government's budget. One of those cuts, one of the big discussions, has been funding to NPR and PBS. This is all through an entity called the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which receives money from the federal government each and every year. They then take that money and dole it out to NPR and PBS, the parent organizations, who then in turn dole it out to their member stations, local PBS and local NPR stations all across America. We spent some time earlier in the show talking about the information side of it, right? The news, the political bias side of it. Then there's the other part of it, which is public safety. There has been a lot of discussion, again, primarily from those on the political left, about the public safety side of this, and that if NPR and PBS have their funding cut, which seems inevitable, it will likely pass the House either later today or early tomorrow, be signed by the president by Friday, that their people are going to die. That public alerts, dangerous weather or civil alerts, will not be able to be broadcast to citizens because of these cuts to NPR and PBS. Amy Klobuchar backed this up on, she was on MSNBC yesterday. Let's listen to what she has to say, and I'm going to give you inside knowledge on how this whole process actually works. Let's take a listen.
This is completely outrageous. Remember, this is money that was already decided on by a Republican House, a Democratic Senate. It was a bipartisan agreement. And if they can just start to go in there and take away these incredibly important funds, the sky's the limit. So that's my first point to our Republican colleagues. What are you doing? I guess you'll just rubber stamp anything Donald Trump wants. But the second one is, look at what this is for. Just as we've seen these weather disasters, including horrifically in Texas, but the fires in Arizona and the like, in many remote areas, or if in states like Florida with hurricane season upon us, they rely on a series of public broadcasting to get alerts out. And when it works well, when you actually have a system set up, it works well. This is not the time to cut back on public radio and public TV. And one thing people don't know, 2-1 on the percentage that comes from federal funding, 2-1, it's double for rural, the percentage, over what it is for urban and other stations. So that's the case we're going to be making, in addition to the obvious on the foreign aid, when it's really about our security, when we're in the middle of all these peace negotiations in the Mideast. Why would you mess around with funding that people have relied on and trust America to provide?
So the comment there from Amy Klobuchar is that because of these cuts to NPR and PBS, people will not have access to emergency alerts. She talks about Florida and, of course, you know, the upcoming hurricane season we're in right now. Of course, here across southeastern North Carolina, the Atlantic hurricane season is on the top of a lot of people's minds throughout the summer months of the year. The horrific situation unfolding in South Texas back a couple of weeks ago around the July 4th weekend with some disastrous flash flooding. She claims that these alerts will not be able to get out without NPR and PBS. And while that sounds good on paper, while that is a solid point to make if you are trying to scare people, if you are trying to scare the public into believing that emergency alerts won't be available, that's great, but it's not true. So there's a couple of different things and a couple of different places to go from here. We're going to start with the EAS system, the Emergency Alert System. It used to be called something else throughout the 90s. It changed its name, and it is the EAS system that you are very familiar with. You've been listening to the radio before, and whatever you're listening to, music, sports, talk, is interrupted by a squelch of tones followed by either a robot or somebody reading off an alert, whether that's a flash flood warning, a tornado watch, whatever the alert might be. You're familiar with those tones. And to walk you through the process, and I think it's important to get rather technical here because the claim being made is that this system cannot survive without NPR and PBS. So here is the EAS, the Emergency Alert System plan here in the state of North Carolina. So the way that this works is that you've got what are called PEP stations, PEP stations. Those are primary entry point stations for the emergency alert system. There are three of them in the state: WBT in Charlotte, WQDR in Raleigh, and WSFL in New Bern. Those are the primary entry points for the emergency alert system. Those are the three stations that would originate an alert from the National Weather Service, the North Carolina Department of Public Safety, whoever wanted to send an alert out. The most familiar ones are, of course, weather alerts. Again, tornadoes, flash floods, so on and so forth. So you've got these primary stations in many cases that originate alerts. From there, you've got this network of a dozen plus stations across North Carolina that are known as LP1 and LP2 stations. Here across our viewing area, Coast 97.3 is the LP1. They're at 97.3 FM. And Modern Rock 98.7 WRMR is the secondary station. So again, I know this is technical and you know, people might say they don't care. But again, it's important to understand this process. So the National Weather Service in Wilmington says there's a tornado on the ground, or there's a tornado warning in Brunswick County. Let's use that for an example. There's not right now, but for our example. The National Weather Service issues an alert and says there is a tornado warning. That immediately is transmitted to the emergency alert system in these two stations, 97.3 and 98.7, originate an alert. It goes from the National Weather Service to WMNX and WRMR. Those stations broadcast the alert to the entire listening area. Okay. Every other station, at least all the ones that I'm familiar with here in Wilmington, listen to 97.3 and 98.7 through a box that is known as an EAS receiver. When those alerts come through, those other stations, like WGNI, like Jammin, like the Wave, when those alerts come through, that programming is interrupted and the alert that is airing on one of those other two stations takes over the airwaves so that you, as anybody listening to radio across southeastern North Carolina, would get an alert that, hey, the National Weather Service is concerned that there could be a tornado somewhere in Brunswick County. That is how the emergency alert system works. All of these stations that are on in our area, and you can see the map for those listening across the state, all of those stations broadcast those important weather alerts. These are not public broadcasters. 97.3 is owned by Cumulus. RMR is owned by Sunrise Broadcasting, which is a subsidiary of WRAL in Raleigh, a Capital Broadcasting Company. These are not public entities. These are for-profit radio stations that sell advertising and do not receive federal funds to operate. And then every other station in the area, at least if they're set up correctly, and for the vast majority of here in our area, they are, the other stations relay that alert. It's a relay system of alerts. The emergency alert system is tested, every couple of, almost every year, but maybe every couple of years, they do a major EAS test. They did one back, I think it was maybe last year or 2 years ago, where your radio, your TV, and your phone went off. And again, I'm looking at this from the radio perspective. It's relatively similar for TV. You've been watching TV before, the screen will get taken over, the audio of some robot coming on and saying, oh, there's a tornado warning here, and so on and so forth. That's how this process works. This is something that every single state across the country has an EAS plan, and they all look very similar to this. You've got initial stations where statewide alerts can originate, and then you've got local stations that are responsible for transmitting those alerts to the area. And the reason that there's two stations in every radio market, you can see Wilmington, Fayetteville, Charlotte. The reason that there's two of those stations is you've got an LP1, that's your primary, and then an LP2, that's your backup. So if there's an issue with the first station and maybe they're having a technical issue, they're off the air, whatever the issue might be, that there's a secondary station that can transmit those alerts. That's how this process works. And in modern times, many of these emergency alert systems are also now connected via the internet, so that when these alerts are issued, they receive the report immediately over the internet and broadcast it out to their audiences. I know I'm a little bit technical on this. I know I'm a little bit in the weeds, but I've heard nobody describe how this process works. And it might be because the vast majority of people don't. In my time dealing with technical stuff behind the scenes here in Wilmington, I am very adept at what this process is. I have set up these systems and set up these receivers to monitor these LP1 and LP2 stations to receive those alerts and transmit those alerts at the time when I was working at the Big Talker here in Wilmington. So that's how this process works. It's not secret. It's not magic. It is a very well thought out system that has worked very successfully. It's the reason when you're driving in your car and you're listening to something and there's a tornado warning or a flash flood warning, the radio is taken over and that alert comes through on your car, gives you the important information that you need. And then you can make decisions based on that. So this is the North Carolina plan for the emergency alert system. This is for TV and radio. Now, in more modern times, the EIS system, again, has existed in some part for over 60 years at this point. Now that everybody is carrying around a cell phone in their pocket, the fact that everybody has access to 4G or 5G internet pretty much anywhere in the United States, there's another system that's called WEA. That's the Wireless Emergency Alert System. The EAS system, in conjunction with cell phone providers, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, transmit emergency alerts in your geographical area based on the GPS coordinates of your phone, broadcast to you a wireless emergency alert. You've probably seen an Amber Alert pop up on your phone before. You're sitting there minding your business. Your phone starts screaming and freaking out. You look down, there's a little yellow triangle, and it tells you that there's an Amber Alert. That's the most common alert that you get through the wireless emergency alert system. And with that, your phone goes off. It very well notifies you what's going on. And then you act on it. If it's a tornado warning for your area, you get into a safe location, interior bathroom, closet, somewhere in a house, no wall, no windows, no exterior walls, and you get safe. So that's how the emergency alert systems currently work. The idea that individuals in Florida, individuals in North Carolina, will not be able to receive these alerts because of funding cuts at NPR and PBS, ladies and gentlemen, is frankly dead wrong. It is not based in any fact or any reality. And if you going back and looking at this list of the stations across the state, there's no NPR affiliates on here. These are all commercial broadcast radio stations that operate exclusively and 100% as for-profit businesses and for-profit entities. So the concept, the idea, the fear-mongering from people like Amy Klobuchar that people are going to just start dying because they're not going to know that there's a hurricane coming towards them, that they're going to die because they don't know that a tornado or flash flooding is taking place because of NPR and PBS, is not only dead wrong, it's disingenuous at best. She knows damn well that almost every single television and radio station across the country participates in their state's version of the emergency alert system. She knows this if she wanted to, but she chooses to embellish the facts. She chooses to embellish that information to turn it into a scary situation that's going to unfold. And oh, by the way, it's all those damn Republicans' faults. And let's look at hurricanes for a second. We, of course, are familiar with those here on the Southeast Coast. And it's something that we have to deal with, hopefully not every year, but every couple of years. the last big storm that we had, Hurricane Florence, I was fortunate enough at the time to spend a couple of days over at Channel 3's new facilities over in Leland. Channel 3, WWAY, and WECT, both of those stations were on the air for something like 48 or 60 some odd hours straight during Hurricane Florence. The storm moved incredibly slow towards the coast, dumped dozens of inches of rain across our area, left an incredible amount of devastation and destruction. Those two stations that are not PBS, right? We're talking about TV now. Those two television stations stayed on the air the entirety of the storm. And some technical issues here and there, but they were on the air the entire time. They're not nonprofits. Those two stations do not receive federal funding from Congress through the Corporation of Public Broadcasters. They are, in many cases, they are local affiliates of, yes, the big networks, but they are locally operated television stations. Yes, they are owned by media conglomerates, but they are locally run and locally operated television stations. They made the decision to stay on the air for 60 hours plus during those storms. Both stations did the exact same thing. There was no financial incentive for them to do that. I'm sure they actually lost out on a whole bunch of advertising because they went commercial free for days on end, losing out on potentially tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of revenue. There was no financial incentive to do that. Why did they do it? Well, because it's an important part of the community in which they serve. They have a vested interest in providing the public with information, even though they're not public media, even though they're not public television stations. Same thing here with radio. You had many of these local stations stay on the air throughout Hurricane Florence doing just that. During Hurricane Isai back a couple of years ago, I anchored radio coverage at the Big Talker for like 14 hours straight. We stayed on the air and provided critical information to people in southeastern North Carolina. Not because the federal government said, you have to. Not because the Corporation for Public Broadcasting wrote us a big check. No, it's because we felt as an entity that is our responsibility to provide that information to our audience, to our listeners, which is exactly what we did. With no public money trading hands. With no checks from the federal government doing so. Local broadcasters have a vested interest in their community, and they have proven time and time again that they want to be there and want to support that community. It's why they stay on the air during tornado warnings. You've ever been watching TV when there's a tornado warning in our area? What happens? They break into Jeopardy and provide you the latest information. They do that. They stay on the air during hurricanes. None of that is required. Or at least the tornado stuff is, but none of the other stuff is required by the federal government. Now, I guess the FCC has some level of standards and things that are required to be followed, but no corporate, no federal money is changing hands. And then you look at, of course, your phone. What with the wireless emergency alert system works incredibly well. Whether you've got a dangerous flash flood warning, a tornado warning for the area that your phone is in at the period of time, the systems work. It is a very well-tested chain of technology that works, for the most part, pretty damn well. So this notion, this idea, this narrative pushed forward by Amy Klobuchar and others on the left that the emergency alert system will not be able to operate. That without NPR and PBS, natural disasters are just going to start killing people all over the country. It's just not true. It's not based in any fact. It's not based in any reality. It is straight up fear-mongering from individuals on the political left that have no better argument as to why their public media entities, which carry water for them, should not be defunded. It's disgusting because it's not true. It is straight up fear mongering when you go on national television, MSNBC, and make the point that people in Florida during this Atlantic hurricane season will not have alerts because of cuts to NPR and PBS. It is dead wrong and it's completely bullshit. It is not based in any fact or any reality. We just walked through how the process works. Amy Klobuchar's narrative is nonsense, it is not truthful, and it is to do nothing more than to fearmonger the American people. And it's a shame. If Amy Klobuchar wants to fund NPR, if she wants to fund PBS, that's her prerogative to do so. Don't scare the American public into the fact that they're going to die from hurricanes, die from flash flooding, die from other natural disasters because of these cuts. It's just not true. I know how the system works. I've been part of the system. I've been part of the build out of the system. I very clearly understand how it works. Amy Klobuchar has no freaking idea what she's talking about, and she's attempting to scare the American public into you're going to just die the next time there's a tornado in your area because of the emergency alert system not working. We have NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. We've got the National Weather Service that provides these alerts to the public. They're then relayed through phones, television stations, radio stations, and NOAA weather radios across the area. That is the case throughout the entirety of the United States. Now, may there be very small areas through the United States where there's no media coverage at all besides an NPR station? Possibly, but I have not seen that. I'm not going to say it's not true because, unlike those on the left, I don't know that for a fact. So might there be small, very, very small remote areas throughout the country, maybe up in places like Alaska, where that's the case, there's only one option? Sure. Okay, then let's discuss those issues. Let's say there's a handful of these stations that are the only option for people in small communities in remote places like Alaska. That's a different discussion. Bring that up and say, let's fund just these groups, these small entities. I would actually be in favor and okay with that. But when you say that people in Florida will not be able to get access to these alerts because of NPR and PBS, it is dead wrong. Television stations and radio stations in Florida follow tropical weather more than any place else in the United States. Their audiences, their listeners, their viewers are well adapted and well informed as to what goes on during natural disasters like tropical storms and hurricanes. Those TV stations make an incredible and put an incredible amount of effort into being a trusted source of that information. And it's frankly not PBS and not NPR because neither of them are providing, at least on the NPR side or the PBS side, excuse me, they don't have meteorologists in St. Petersburg. They don't have meteorologists in Tampa. That's done by local for-profit television stations in those areas. So to wrap all of this up and put a nice little bow on it, this passed the Senate last night in a 51-49 vote. It is expected to make its way over to the House today, and President Donald Trump is expected to sign the bill by Friday. I don't know. It's going to depend on what the House schedule is today. So this will make its way over to the House, and as you can imagine, the president will sign it, and then we'll have to wait and see. Does all of NPR and PBS collapse after this? The answer, of course, is no. So all of the hand-wringing, all of the pearl-clutching, all of the fear-mongering from the likes of Amy Klobuchar and others will once again fall on deaf ears. It will be yet another boy who cried wolf, just like all the cuts to the National Weather Service, right? That we're going to leave hundreds of millions of Americans unsafe, that alerts were not going to be able to come out. That's what the left tried pulling down in Kerrville, Texas. Of course, it wasn't true. There were 5 meteorologists on staff during that horrific flooding. What was the issue? It was the middle of the night and there were no phones. And of course, nobody's up at 2:30 in the morning listening to the radio. They're asleep. Their kids at a summer camp. Wasn't because of Donald Trump's cuts to NOAA. Another completely disingenuous lie by the left. But I guess I repeat myself. So, thanks for bearing with me and having me explain the technical stuff behind it. I've not seen that anywhere else throughout social media or any other discussion as to how these systems, how these processes actually work. I'm not going to encourage you to necessarily read it. It's 33 pages long, but I will throw the link in our show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. If you are super interested in getting information about this, the North Carolina State Emergency Communications Committee has a 33-page handbook on how the alert system works across the state of North Carolina. And it goes through the entire process of what the alerts are, required monthly tests, contacts. Here's your system of how all of this information transmits through satellites, over the internet, other radio stations. It is a very well understood, very fleshed out system that provides these alerts to radio, television stations, and of course your phones in the modern technological age. So if you're interested, I'll throw the link to that over on our show notes, patreon.com/Nick Craig. Well, that's going to do it for a Thursday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Thanks to the Law Group here in Wilmington for their continued support. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call at 910-251-6088. Don't forget, you can catch the show live weekday morning, 7 a.m., YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcast. We're back with you tomorrow morning right here on the Nick Craig Show.